Good evening. I call this Wednesday, November 13th, Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. I'm Chairman Jeff Olson, and I'll be presiding over the meeting tonight. May I have a roll call, please?
Yes. Perez is absent. Hyatt, absent. Markham?
Here.
Millen?
Here.
Olson?
Here.
Vineyard?
Here.
And Williams?
Here.
Are there any questions or amendments to the previous meeting minutes for Wednesday, October 9th, 2019? May I have a motion, please, then, to approve the meeting minutes from the Wednesday, October 19th, 2019 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call vote on the motion, please.
Yes. Markham?
Yes.
Millen?
Yes.
Olson?
Yes.
Vineyard?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Minutes are approved. Are there any comments tonight from the public regarding any topic that is not on tonight's agenda? Seeing as there is not, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the public hearing portion. There is one public hearing scheduled for tonight's Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. The purpose of this hearing is to invite testimony from members of the public regarding the proposed request that is being considered before this commission tonight. Public testimony from persons present who wish to speak may be for or may be against the request or to ask questions of the petitioner regarding the request being heard. Those persons wishing to testify tonight are asked to speak clearly, one at a time, state your name, who you represent. You're also asked to sign in at the podium up there. If you plan to speak during tonight's public hearing as a petitioner or as a member of the public, please stand now, raise your right hand, and repeat after me. I, state your name, please, do solemnly swear that the testimony I will present at this hearing is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Thank you. The order for receiving testimony tonight during the public hearing will be as follows. The petitioner, which is the city, will make their presentation. We will then have those who wish to speak in favor of the request speak. Then have those who wish to speak in opposition of the request, followed finally by those who wish to have any questions of Christie. So to get started, may I have a motion, please, to open the public hearing on petition number PZC 2019-23, text amendment to Yorkville Municipal Code, adult use cannabis.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call vote on the motion, please.
Yes. Markham?
Yes.
Millen?
Yes.
Olson?
Yes.
Vineyard?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
All right, public hearing up for discussion tonight is PZC 2019-23. The United City of Yorkville petitioner has filed an application with the United City of Yorkville, Kendall County, Illinois, requesting a text amendment to Title 10, Chapter 6, permitted and special use of the Yorkville Municipal Code regulating the zoning of adult use cannabis business establishments, specifically the time, place, manner, number, and minimum distance limitations between such uses and locations the city deems sensitive, such as existing schools, parks, religious institutions, and residential land uses. Christy, would you please present on PZC 2019-23?
Good evening, everyone. As you mentioned, we are doing the adult use cannabis regulations. This is a text amendment to our existing zoning ordinance, so I'm going to give you a little background on our medical cannabis regulations. So currently, the city's zoning ordinance has regulations which allow medical cannabis cultivation and medical cannabis dispensaries. There are special uses in our manufacturing district, the M1 district, and they have established setbacks. Those setbacks from pre-existing preschools, elementary, secondary, daycare centers, public parks, religious land, institutions have been established, and they're 2,500 feet for cultivation centers and 1,000 feet for dispensaries. And this was done in 2014 in response to the state's what's called Compassionate Care Act, which allows for the medical use of cannabis. We felt that these regulations were appropriate at the time, and we have not addressed them since. But the current zoning ordinance does not address the recreational cannabis businesses that have been by state statute allowed in municipalities throughout Illinois. They go into effect in January. So if we go to the next slide, we'll talk a little bit more about that. So the act, as we refer to it, is called the Cannabis Regulation and Tax Act. And this act was passed in June of this year. and it made legal recreational use of cannabis by adults, and those are age 21 and older. The effective date of this passage of this legislation is January 1st. So we only had 6 months in that interim to familiarize ourselves with the final version of the law and then, in effect, put forward recommendations on how we would regulate these uses. Tonight, we're only dealing with the zoning aspect of it. There are other aspects of this passage of this act that are affected in other ways, but we're only discussing the zoning of it. The reason why we have to address this, and we have to address it prior to the January 1 date of the effectiveness of this, the effective date of this act, is because right now, as I mentioned, we don't have a retail dispensary component of it identified in our zoning ordinance. With that being said, there are some of the opinion that if January 1 comes and we don't have it identified, these uses can then locate in existing business zonings as a permitted outright use and without regulation from the municipality. So the act established that municipalities can regulate these types of uses, and there are six categories that are identified as cannabis businesses. And you can leave it right on that slide. There are craft growers, there are processors, cultivation centers, dispensaries, infusers, and transporters. And I'll talk a little bit more about those as we go along. So as we mentioned in the opening, the municipalities have the ability to do two things. One, we can outright prohibit these types of uses in our city limits, or we can allow them and then regulate them. And the way that we would regulate them, as established by the Act, is through the place. So where would they be able to locate the zoning district, the time, so that has to deal with their hours of operation, the manner, which would take into consideration how they operate, their standards for operation, the number, we can limit the types and the number of uses within the community, and then we can establish minimum distance between cannabis uses and those uses that I mentioned earlier that the city may seem to feel are sensitive in regards to the land use compatibility. So those, again, would be schools, parks, religious institutions, and residential land uses. Next slide, please. So this is what we're proposing. I'm sorry that came out a little light, but it's also in your packet. In regards to place, the city has established kind of a proposal that would allow all six types of identified cannabis businesses to exist in Yorkville, but as a special use. And a special use is a use that requires extra care and extra review by the committee that's before you tonight, as well as the city council. So they would have a public hearing, there would be a notification process, and then you would have the opportunity to voice your opinion before a decision is made. We are proposing, though, that there's only one, a maximum of one use per category. So the maximum uses of adult cannabis businesses would be six within Yorkville, if we got all six categories permitted in, through licensing. The special use would be for the craft grower in the ag district, as well as the cultivation center in the ag district. The dispensary, which is your retail component, and the infuser would be a special use in the B3 district, and we'll explain a little bit more about which each of these uses pertain to. And then all the uses would be special uses in the M1 and M2 zoning district. So just to give you a little bit of information, a craft grower is one that grows the cannabis on their site. Then they can cultivate it, cure it, package it, and then they would send it off to the locations that would either do the infusion or the dispensary. The cultivation center is a larger form of a grower, so they would do more agriculture-type uses. They would cultivate and process it, transport it as well. The adult use dispensary is more of your retail component, so they would be the ones that would be selling and dispensing the cannabis. The infuser is an operation where they take the cannabis from either the craft grower or the cultivation center, and they will infuse it in products. Then you have the processor. They will also extract and then concentrate these cannabises into different forms. And then you have the transporter, and they're the ones that are authorized to mobilize the different transportation modes to get the product to its different locations. So the next slide. So when we speak of time, we can regulate the hours of operation. We have modified the hours of operation from what the state has required. I think the state gives them to 10 to 10. The city is proposing during the weekdays and Saturday, the 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. operation time, and then on Sundays, noon to 5. Further regulations have to do with the operational standards. So we have a couple of regulations that we added that were not in the state's regulations, and one would be we would prohibit on-premise consumption. So in none of those six categories can you consume the product on site. Signage, we decided to limit the manner that these types of uses advertise, particularly the dispensary. So dispensaries are limited to one wall-mounted business sign. There's no electronic message board signs, and there can be no imagery of leaves or smoking or paraphernalia. And that's consistent with the state's regulations as well. There's an application that's required to be submitted as part of the special use, and they'll identify ownership, floor plans, security protocols, and business plan. And then we've established special standards for special uses that respond to the impact of the use, the suitability of the use, and if there's adequate security and storage. And finally, we have decided, I have not seen this in other communities, but it has been discussed, that we have decided to restrict e-commerce delivery services and drive-thrus for dispensaries. And now we get to the distance of the measurements. For the adult cannabis cultivation center, we are proposing that these can be located no closer than 500 feet of any property line for the mentioned sensitive land uses. But this does not include commercial trade schools, which typically locate within our manufacturing district. They also may not be within 250 feet of a residential land use, and they cannot conduct any sales or distribution at their site. The dispensary, this is more of their commercial land use. This may not be located within 500 feet of a pre-existing public school, nursery, school, etc. It may not also be located within 250 feet of a pre-existing residential land use. There is a maximum gross floor area that we're recommending of 5,000 square feet. And then per the state act, it has to have at least 75% of that floor area dedicated to the dispensary. The infuser has similar criteria. Again, 500 feet from those schools and parks and religious institution, 250 feet from pre-existing residential land uses, and then it also has a maximum capacity of 75% of the floor area. At least 75% of the floor area dedicated to the infusing organization. It can also allow for co-location of a dispensary and a crab roller in the same location. Then we have the processing organization, buffer of 500 feet from the school's parks. Then there's a 250 feet from the property line for residential purposes. Again, at least 75% of the floor area is dedicated to the activities. They cannot sell, though, or distribute at this location. Then the final one is the transporting. This, again, has a 500-foot buffer as well as a 250-foot buffer for residential, and the transporting has to be the sole operation in that tenant space. So we cannot conduct any other uses within that tenant space but what's allowed by the Act. And then finally, for our research, in addition to looking at what the Illinois Municipal League recommended as criteria for zoning, we also looked to our neighbors to see what they were doing. And this table kind of shows you what our neighbors are contemplating. Kendall County has permitted these types of uses, and they will be special uses as well in their manufacturing business district. They do not allow on-site consumption. Oswego has permitted them. But they do have a minimum of a minimum of 200 feet for schools. We're proposing 500 for schools and 250 for residential. Montgomery, some of these communities, again, they're still in the proposal phase, so if I give you information, it's where they were when we contacted them if they had not approved it. Montgomery has permitted it. They're looking at a minimum distance. They haven't permitted that, but they're in consideration, and they're looking at a minimum distance from additional land uses to be discussed. Sugar Grove has prohibited. Plano's undecided. Naperville has prohibited. Plainville has prohibited. And Lombard has also permitted them. But the reason why I added Lombard, even though they're not a neighboring community, is because they have offered no buffers for any of the adjoining land uses. So a dispensary could locate adjacent to residential. So if you have any questions, staff has provided in the packet some information on maps. Although we are proposing a 500-foot buffer from schools, parks, religious institutions, and a 250-foot for residential, we provided you maps to show 500-foot buffers, 1,000-foot buffer, 2,500-foot buffer as well. We also have a map on the table that's showing all of the land uses where these types of different cannabis businesses can locate, as well as there's an article in here that I provided that talks about what plan commissioners should look for in an ordinance that regulates municipal ability for cannabis sales in their jurisdiction. So if you have any questions, staff is available to answer them, hopefully in more detail if needed.
Who wants to start?
We can do four events as public hearing.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry. All right. Firstly, is there anyone who wishes to speak in favor of the proposed request or answer? When you get up there, please state your name and if you represent anyone.
Hi, my name is Kevin Blaney. I'm representing Green Valley Dispensary. I am a lifetime resident of Kendall County. I own a greenhouse just on the south side of Kendall County, all the country, and we own a greenhouse construction business. I want to thank you guys for discussing this. It's a very controversial topic. We appreciate Yorkville as a city for allowing this. We will be applying for a dispensary in the city of Yorkville, and I believe that a lot of your setbacks are getting are very on point. I want to say that your 250 and 500 feet really sticks with what we believe in. We don't want this so restrictive that it prohibits anybody from putting in a proper place, and we agree with your B3 special use. I do agree with the 250 foot from residential because you don't want this in somebody's backyard, but you do want it close enough to where it doesn't prohibit completely. Obviously, we all know cannabis is already in our community. Illinois allowed it. It's a good thing that the dispensary will bring revenue. It should add an additional $70,000 to this city in tax revenue. And it is a good thing because this is going to be a safe product now that it's regulated instead of on the black market. In order to keep a safe distance, we agree with your 250-500. Keep this away from children. Obviously, it's a 21 and over product, just like alcohol. Only people 21 and over may enter the dispensary. I like your idea on signage, allowing visual signage on the building, but not out in the open promoting to children. I believe that's all I've got.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Sir, go ahead, sir. Yep.
Good afternoon, or evening. My name is John Cooney. I am with Yorkville Holdings. We own the strip center on the south side, right at the intersection of 71 and 47. Fountain Valley, I think it's Fountain View. We acquired that in October. I am also one of the part owners of the Roadhouse, Route 46. 7, which is a tavern or bar that is there. We're in agreement with the majority of what the previous speaker had to say. One of the reasons why we need a vote from this body today is to move it on over to the City Council, because all of the applications for the dispensaries are due by January 1, 2020. And we would like to identify Yorkville as one of the cities that they want to move into. We've been in discussions with two separate dispensaries who are interested in this. Our property, which falls within the 250, were residential. Now, each of these facilities are governed by separate rules and regulations set up by the Illinois Department of Professional and Financial Responsibility Department that have security systems that are tied to the state police. Each of one of the facilities that are the primary one that is going to do in a dispensary at our location will have a triple camera security system. You have a built-in safe inside, which is going to be a cinder block or a metal or steel mesh safes. You're going to have a separate entrance that would have gates around there, so that the van pulling into the truck, pulling in with the cannabis and or money leaving would be gated, so there would be no means to have any issues with that. Each of the people coming in will be camera, their IDs checked, recorded, submitted to a state database so that they can check on that. You'll have a guard checking them in, guard checking them out. We have residents working there, as well as our staff, or the staff of our tenant would be working there. The zero lot line, I think, would be more accommodating. It would increase the number of potential sites, including the one that I happen to be a partial owner of. We've been in Yorkville. Each of these members of Steve Freeman, Jay DeMarco, and myself, I've been here investing in the owner of land here since 2013. We've opened up a roadhouse. We were participants in owning the land over where Yorkville Bowl was. Hopefully that will happen again soon. The issue of whether this would have any effect on zero lot line being with children or neighborhoods is relatively non-problematic in our opinion. It is very similar to a liquor store, a bar, which have zero lot lines, tobacco stores, with one advantage. Ours is secure. It's going to be more secure than a bank. The cameras will be shared with the local police, so if they want to look at that, they could go in there and look at any of our cameras any time of the day. There's no loitering allowed. We've already established a provision at Roadhouse that there will be no cannabis consumption on our premises. They will be escorted off our premises if there is. So there's no worry about consumption. So we'd be in favor of passing it as drafted with the 250 setback, with, if at all possible, with directions that could, the board could look at it as to going down to zero lot. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak in favor of the request? Is there anyone present who wishes to speak in opposition to the request? Are there any questioners or question from commissioners for Christy right now? Where do we begin? I had sent Christy a long email with a bunch of questions that I thought were pertinent, so I jumped the gun and got answers in front of tonight. So I figured I would share a couple of them, and maybe that'll answer some of the questions we get, right? Our ordinance doesn't mention if cannabis can be used in public. Illinois law says that it can't be, but what if Illinois law changes down the road? And then Christy said that actually the city was working on that.
Correct. So there's a different section, as I mentioned, that other departments are working on. There's the employment section side, and then there's the police enforcement section side. So these types of uses will be enforced through our adjudication process. So if there's any infraction, you will get a citation via a ticket, and then you have to show up here. The fine is up to $750, but we are being compliant with the state's Smoke-Free Act, which says that you cannot smoke in public places.
So none of the six cannabis business establishment divisions will have on-site consumption at all, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then I'm completely ignorant as to the process, but what I had read is that in the cannabis infusion process, heavy scents, heavy smells, because you're I don't know what you call it, you're distilling the material, and that creates a scent. And Christy had responded that, just like everything else, all zoning districts in Yorkville are to the same performance standards when it comes to noise, smoke, odorous material, vibration, toxic, etc. So if it got out of hand,
then we can issue a ticket, and that would be a property maintenance violation. Again, with the same penalty of up to $750.
The 500 feet and 250 feet limit, I think, is important. Those maps that you put together are fantastic. Just fantastic. I don't know if you... Let's see here. Does everyone understand these maps? What they did was they took the different zoning districts, colored them. Is that green or yellow?
Bit of both.
Bit of both?
Okay. Chartreuse.
All right. And then went to the religious institutions, schools, etc., and put buffer zones around, right, and crossed out what would not, what overlapped. So if we're looking on the first map, the dispensary slash cultivation permitted locations with a 500-foot buffer, you can see that in real practice, right, the dispensary locations would be in the, you know, from the undeveloped land currently on the north side of 34, east of 47. It would be in Kendall Marketplace in the outlots where it's not currently developed. It would not likely be in the Wrigley property, but it would be permitted there. To the north, most of the subdivisions around, or most of the area around Bristol Bay, on both sides of the road would be permitted. And then once you come out towards the southwest portion of town, you're down 71. I mean, you're 5-10 miles outside of town before you start hitting some of those areas, which makes sense for cultivation facilities out there. Conversely, if you flip the page and you look on the next map, if you take that from a 500-foot buffer down to a 2,500-foot buffer, you really limit where these places can be at all. You might as well just prohibit it outright because you've eliminated, you know, 99% of the usable land in the city limits. So I would think if we were to go to permitting it, we can maybe go to prohibiting it, but if we were to permitting it, 2,500 feet is not the answer. We might as well just prohibit it anyways. So where's the sweet spot, right? There's personally, to me, in my opinion, areas on the 500-foot buffer that I wouldn't like to see this. If you look at the 1,000-foot buffer, which is, I think, the third map, that further limits it from the 500-foot buffer, but kind of keeps the same area. You have a smaller area in Kendall Marketplace, so why bother? You have a smaller area in Yorkville Crossing, so why bother? Maybe it doesn't do any good to go from that 500-foot to that 1,000. And then the last map is the... This is the... What is this one different?
500 and 250.
Okay, so 250 from residential. Yeah, it's not a noticeable change except that it adds area right around 47 and 34. And in my opinion, the central corridors of town, I really don't want to see it there if it is a permitted use, but we can't get away from Yorkville Crossing and we can't get away from portions of Kendall Marketplace. Thoughts on the distance?
I actually have one quick note too.
Yeah,
on these maps, and there's a little disclaimer to note, a lot of that area to the north
are existing developments and they're labeled on the map. So any development up there or any change would require a PUD agreement amendment or annexation agreement amendment or require replatting and all that. So
sure.
It would go over lots of review and things would actually have to change. Those are just left there because right now there are no uses there. It's agriculture. So they were left open. But a lot of that area, depending on future development, could change.
So that 500-foot, 250-foot buffer came from some guidance given by the Illinois Municipal League,
correct?
As to some recommendations for what other municipalities are doing as far as this permitted use. So it's good info.
In addition to that, it's also important to note that the state establishes a buffer for when you change, you know, zoning and there's a variance requested. And that buffer is 250 feet because they feel that's the buffer area of the most impacted properties, any change in land use. Well, the city goes a little bit further and we do a 500-foot buffer. So that notifies you of any change that happens within 500 feet of your property. So that's where you get the 250 and the 500-foot request buffers to be consistent with the state as well as our current ordinances.
I had asked her a question about the hours of operation. I mean, if you're going to permit this to exist, maybe I'm being naive, but I personally don't believe that if they want to be open till 10 at night, they should be able to be open to 10 at night. I don't know why we'd restrict their hours unless they're obtrusive by nature and you would want to restrict their hours, and if that's the case, I don't want them in town. So I'm not quite sure why we would restrict their hours, but it's something we're able to do per state law, correct?
Correct. And we're only restricting by 2 hours.
Right. One of the most important things, which Mr. Delaney brought up, is prohibiting of electronic message boards and imagery on the signs. I thought was super smart, right? That would be the ISO. No matter what, if they're selling breakfast food or they're selling burgers at McDonald's, that flashy signs I don't want to see. So that was smart. That was really smart to pick that up. And then I had some questions about the restrictions on e-commerce and delivery. Is that to avoid having material delivered to minors at a house, or is there another reason?
So there's a couple of thoughts that came up. From a planning side, we wanted to not have that advertisement throughout our community. There are services right now in other states that allow that, that have these e-delivery services, but also there's a public safety.
Kind of like a Grubhub for...
Kind of like a Grubhub
DoorDash,
where you order online and they deliver it to your home.
They should do both, I hear. That's a thing.
So there's some complications there. Again, there's a maximum amount that any individual can have on hand at a time. So we don't know if that would create any issues with violation of the state, or it says it's 30 grams per individual. Secondly, we thought it would curb any public safety concerns because these businesses deal in cash only. We didn't know if there would be any issue with these being targeted by individuals because they are carrying a large amount as well as cash. So we felt we didn't want that added issue.
So the transporting system operation would not be affected by not
Correct.
Having e-commerce, because all they are essentially is a middleman going from a grower to a dispensary.
Correct. Okay. Exactly.
And you have to have a license to do that.
Correct. And they're going to sites that are licensed and not to individual homes.
Okay. And I think I know the answer to this, but I want to reiterate. We're only currently going to allow one of each of these different cannabis business establishment uses in city limits at this time.
That is a recommendation from staff.
Okay. And when would that change? What if we have 7 dispensaries show up and say they want to open business?
So the first...
How do we choose that Mr. Delaney's the guy that gets it?
Well, that's why you have a special use process. So you see their applications, you look at the business plan, you look at the floor plan, you look at all of these standards that staff has established. But also, keep in mind, in this first round of licenses that are going to be approved in our area, which is the Chicago, Naperville, Elgin area, there's 47 licenses. majority of those are going to go to Cook County, which is where Chicago is, and then we have other communities, Aurora, that would be competing for those. So out of those 47, it's highly unlikely that we would get more than one here.
What are their questions now that I've monopolized the time?
I just had one, and it was to go into a little bit further, as you were talking about, Jeff. For cultivation specifically, will that only be allowed inside of agricultural and manufacturing districts? Excuse me.
Correct, yes.
And inside a building?
So you can. You can. And right now we allow the cultivation centers for medicinal cannabis to be allowed in the manufacturing district. Another thing about that is when we talk about the setbacks for the agricultural land uses, that 250 feet does not apply to any homestead that is on any agricultural land. So if you have a home on your farm and you want to cultivate this, you don't have to worry about that 250 foot setback for residential.
Are we limiting hours of operation for cultivation centers or just dispensaries?
Just dispensaries. Yeah, because we felt that that use was similar to other uses that would regulate time frame. We don't regulate mostly retail uses, but we do regulate adult uses. So like your adult bookstores, if they are occurring in the city, and we do regulate service hours for liquor. So we felt this would be a more appropriate way of regulating time.
Does the state have any kind of regulations on the maximum quantity that a dispensary can have on site?
I don't think they have a maximum quantity, but the reason why they have that 75% for the usage is because they want to limit the quantity that you have for storage. So you only have 25% of your gross floor area for storage.
I was ignorant to the fact of all the security measures that were required for the dispensary.
Yes.
That's like Fort Knox compared to a liquor store around here. That's good to hear. What else? Questions? Anything else?
All right. Since all public testimony regarding this petition has been taken, may I please have a motion to close the taking of testimony and this public hearing? Second. Roll call vote on the motion, please.
Millen?
Yes.
Olson?
Yes.
Vineyard?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Hyatt?
Yes.
And Markham?
Yes.
This is to close the public hearing. No vote on the actual topic. So the public hearing portion of tonight's meeting is closed. All right. Unfinished business. We have no unfinished business, so we'll move on to new business. The order currently in the agenda is for the issue we just talked about, PZC 2019-23, to go first, followed by PZC 2019-26. Dave Schultz on behalf of Kendall Holdings. I'm going to propose a vote to flip those so we can do the Kendall Holding ones first in case this next part goes long and we don't keep them there. So can we just do a voice vote on that?
Yes.
All in favor of moving PZC 2019-26 before PZC 2019-23, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Okay, we'll move it. Then, Jason, would you please do your presentation on PZC 2019-26, David Schultz, on behalf of
Kendall. It's not quite a presentation, but I'll summarize it all for you. David Schultz, on behalf of Kendall Holdings, LLC, is seeking a replat of into 10 lots on a 37-acre site at Kendall Marketplace. It's right now one or two big lots. They're just creating some outlots for new development and hopefully some commercial buildings. The real thing to take a look here is the existing development agreement for Kendall Marketplace. It states within the agreement that the development of this property will stay in line with the conceptual plan. So when looking at this plat, we have to ensure that it's being divided in a way that will still allow for that conceptual plan to be developed.
Yeah.
It sure looks like it does.
Yes, the only difference is that instead of 2 lots, they're doing 5 lots on the very south end of the property. But the square footage, the style, and the elements, just when this was developed versus now, the market reality is smaller lots to create some more buildings, but the square footage of retail space will stay the same. So staff agrees that it is still intent with the conceptual site plan. We're looking forward to opening some development out there. Dave Schultz is here if you have any questions for him.
No, I don't think so. I mean, as always, all very well put together. Would you like to say anything?
Just thank you for your consideration. I appreciate that. I've been on this project since the beginning of 2007. I'm really excited to see some movement on this, have the ability. There's some interest, so just looking this.
Does the decreasing of those couple lot sizes just increase the marketability of those spaces?
Exactly. Okay. We're getting rid of the big box stores and going down a little smaller.
Okay.
Is the main reason, and the ownership is the only reason why we're going through this process.
You want to have any questions for Dave?
Yeah, here's what I do. This development on the north side, Blackberry Shore. Has this always been in the plan?
Yes. So actually, Blackberry Shore Lane has single family.
Yeah.
And then there's also in between, the commercial portion and the single family, there's going to be townhomes as well. And Dave, would have brought that as well.
Yep.
All right, no other questions. May I have a motion then to approve petition PZC 2019-26, David Schultz, Kendall Holdings LLC.
So moved. Second.
Roll call vote.
Can we please read the motion?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
In consideration of the proposed final plat of subdivision of Kendall Marketplace Unit Number 1, the Planning Zoning Commission recommends approval of the plat to the City Council as presented by the petitioner and plans prepared by H.R. Green, dated last revised 10/30/19, subject to review comments provided by the City Engineer, EEI Corp., dated October 8, 2019, and November 1st, 2019.
Thank you. Roll call vote on the motion, please.
Yes. Olson?
Yes.
Vineyard?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Hyatt?
Yes.
Markham?
Yes.
And Millen?
Yes.
All right, the motion is approved. Thank you. Christy, is there anything you want to add to 2019-23, your full text amendment?
No, I'm just looking forward to any more questions that you have. Hopefully I can answer them.
Wonderful job.
Do you guys have firm opinions either way? Because I'm waffling. I'd be very interested to hear some opinions.
You say this again, I didn't hear you.
I said, does anyone have any firm opinions either way? Because I'm on the fence. I'd be very interested to hear some opinions.
If you're new,
please share.
Big fan of business. Big fan of revenue. Hate building revenue off of bad business. I disapprove of many things the government wants to do, be federal, state, or local, none of which are relevant here. I hate the idea of being business here in Yorkville. I approve of the sign part. I approve of the no toking on premises. I disapprove of every other word except for some various nouns, pronouns, adverbs. Aside from that, no use for it. I, one of the few people in here, grew up in the 60s, knew a bunch of people who were a mess, had private practice, a law office in Plano, met a bunch of people who were a mess. I also met a bunch of people who, turned out okay. I hate painting with broad brushes, but I have it on relatively good authority stuck back in what old generals refer to as my day is weak compared to the stuff they're doing now. And that frightens me.
Devil's advocate, I would ask you, what's the difference between that and a liquor store? It's still the usage is going to come down to personal responsibility and parental responsibility to keep it out of the hands of kids. I can't find a difference. I think that's the same thing.
Well, I think there's a difference in people accepting responsibility for themselves. I think there's a difference in parents accepting
responsibility. In times, you mean? You're saying in eras?
Yes. I mean, okay, I'm the grumpy old guy. Get it. But that's the way it is.
I spoke to probably 40 people on this, and the vast majority agree with you, Don. And there were, and you know, sometimes that's an echo chamber, right? The people you talk to generally tend to have the same opinion as you do. But the people that I spoke to that were for it were enthusiastically for it, about its health benefits and A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the different great things about it. And if the state has made it legal, federal government still hasn't, but if the state has made it legal, we already, you know, if you are disagree with it, you already lost that fight, right? The state's made it legal. If we all of a sudden banned alcohol in Yorkville, we know very well that we'd go down to Plano and grab a drink, and I think it's going to be the exact same thing if we prohibit it in Yorkville with cannabis. All we're doing, and there is value to that, all we're doing is taking a stand and say, no, we don't want it. We don't want to sell it in our town. We understand that we're not going to reap the benefits tax-wise and be able to massage where it can go. But I think that might just be a false fight because they're just going to roll down the street and go to Plano. Don or Rich, what do you think?
I agree with Don in a lot of ways. I think the premise of what we're here for today, it's here. I think the information that the staff has provided has been thorough, detailed, answered the questions that I had about it. Personally, I don't think state or local government should be able to go against a federal law. That's just personally. I think there should be penalties and stuff for that, but for what we're here for and the zoning of it, I see no reason.
Can you speak to the public safety portion of it? I mean, do you think there's any drastic difference? I understand people's concerns have been, well, you're going to have people driving under the influence.
Well,
but I think you have that anyway.
So here's the thing. On my way over here, I was stopped at an extra long stoplight. The construction just won't end. And I'm like, is that a skunk? Just then I watched the person in the car in front of me pass back. Didn't share cigarettes when I smoked them, so kind of two and two added up. It's here. Anytime it is regulated, I think it's better when, at least to the point where, you know, getting it from shady people with no regulation, I get that point of it. In my career, I can tell you that I've seen far more issues with alcohol. Mm-hmm. On a hundreds to one, mm-hmm. when it comes to that. And don't get me wrong, I don't go back and find toxicologies for every person that I take in, but I do have to say a majority of the time it is alcohol related.
I've never heard anyone say, because of all this alcohol I drank, my life has improved. I mean, but the stories I heard is, because of all this cannabis that I'm smoking, my life has improved.
Well, don't get me wrong. Any alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, anything like that has the ability to change DNA. Just with the meds that we take, same thing. You can, the use of it can change DNA strands, and I'm certainly not a professional in DNA, but it's plenty of documented research behind that. I wish I had crystal ball to see what the future holds, but, you know.
Colorado, I know, has reported more driving under the influence.
I'm not aware of that. I can check it out at least.
They've also, I think, done a good job getting out ahead of it and establishing good municipal requirements so that they can be determined where these places are. And essentially tonight, with the requirements for distance from all these places, essentially we're voting for not 1,000 feet or 500 feet or dealing with that minutia. It's really just permitted or not, because you can't.
That decision's already been made in town. Yeah. We're here for the zoning aspect of it, regardless of what our personal feelings are. There are plenty of things that I voted yes for on this board in my time that I've been personally against. But I have to take my personal feelings toward it out of it and look at it as, hey, that's not what I'm here for.
Remember we had the gentleman who came down here who wanted to build that wedding facility right on the river.
Yeah.
And it was two issues, and I can't remember what the two issues were, but one of them was, can we rezone this piece of property to have that type of establishment there? Which, yes, we could. And some of us voted, yes, you could. Can we put a wedding facility or reception hall right in the spot? No, you can't. I think that's what this is, right? We're not Illinois legislators at all. And I think we have to get these rules in place and then let the city council decide what they want to do and let them to make the moral judgment. I'm right there with you, Don. I mean, my blood is ice water from the mountains. I'm as square as there ever been. I have no personal, you know, knowledge of this at all. I wish I could speak more eloquently about it, but everything that Christy and Jason put in here makes very good sense to me about how to organize this so that it's not intrusive to the city. That's all I got. Anybody else have anything to add? Questions? Comments?
I spent a lot of time talking to different people, actually more so outside of town. And it's been probably 5 or 6 hours just researching difference between alcohol and marijuana. And I don't know, there's 30,000 people die of alcohol abuse, like almost like an overdose, too many shots, blood alcohol, brain activity, done. Right? Pretty hard to overdose on pot, as they say. But it's still, it's an issue about the responsibility of the individual and then also the regulation. So, I told you, I talked to 20, 30 people also. One lost his son to a drunk driver. And I asked him, what do you think about this proposal? The state here, because I've got a vote, be part of, this week. And he said, I'd rather see it regulated than abolished, because otherwise people are going to find an irresponsible way to take on talked to others, ran up the road, was killed. He said the same thing. So that was pretty impactful that one father lost his son due to a drunk driver. One guy got ran off the road from a pot smoker. So that negating the fact that some harm can come out of this.
Personal responsibility, it boils down to, right?
And then the last thing, I talked to some 20-year-olds. And she said, Mr. Moon, I think if they almost legalize it, it takes almost the coolness out of it and the edge out of it. And I think actually less younger people would use it. So I thought that was kind of interesting too. So, but that's just how you would be.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments? All right. Then may I have a motion, please, to approve the petition PZC 2019-23, text amendment to Title 10, Chapter 6, permitted in special uses, adult cannabis use.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call vote on the motion, please. Every single time.
In consideration of testimony presented during a public hearing on November 13th, 2019, The Planning and Zoning Commission recommends the approval to the City Council of a request to amend the United City of Yorkville zoning ordinance as presented by staff in a memorandum dated October 15, 2019.
Roll call vote on the motion, please.
Yes. Vineyard?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Hyatt?
Yes.
Markham?
No.
Millen?
Yes.
Olson?
Yes. The motion is approved. All right. Additional business. Would you like to update us on that, Christy or Jason?
Sure. We're going to do a training session, so if you're not interested in what urban planning is, feel free to leave.
If you want to stay, feel free to stay.
Feel free to stay. Kind of try to think of what they look like in three dimensions. ask questions about materials, ask questions about complementary additional buildings that aren't part of the main project. Are you going to have a accessory structure? What's the material going to be made of? Sometimes staff ask.
I know for fences we've sometimes tried to specify a material. How much input can we give for facades?
So it's so interesting. Some communities do have appearance
code standards
or architectural review boards. We do have some appearance standards, but they're very lax at this moment, and we're trying to address that in their UDO, which is the Unified Development.
For historic Yorkville or greater Yorkville?
We're trying to establish character. So what you can do is we're looking at more definitive for residential, and we're looking at the form-based code already. We have more definitive for commercial land uses. You don't want to get in the habit of, this has gone awry with form-based codes, where you kind of select the materials for them, and then they can choose out of it. You don't want to get that narrow of a scope, because then you begin to have monotony in your communities. So you want some aspect of spontaneity, of variation, but you also want to control it so that you create a cohesiveness in your community. So that's constantly looking at.
I think Evanston has a board just like that, where if you're going to build a any sort of building in Evanston, they approve your facade no matter what type of use the building is.
And I've worked in communities like that, and sometimes it's helpful and sometimes it's not. Sometimes you have people arguing on what color the door should be, or I don't like that plan.
How big a window is.
Correct. And then that becomes a nuisance to anybody that wants to develop in the community, becomes an impediment. So when you have not having an architectural commission, when you have projects come before you and staff, we've done this with our review. But you should begin to ask for, and we'll start requesting material sample boards. That way you can touch, you can see, you can feel, and you can get an understanding. Those of you in backgrounds of building construction, and you can begin to understand, I don't know if that's going to, you know, be a good product for that type of land use, even though we have building codes. You may have knowledge about things that we aren't looking at as planners.
So let me get this straight. So if somebody came up here and said, okay, on Kendall Marketplace, I want to build a one-story strip mall with EFIS, right? That it's an insulated product that's got like a texture on it, and Jeff Olson happens to hate EFIS. I can say, no, EFIS is awful. You got to do another brick.
So no, you can't do that because you remember you are held to the standards for whatever request it is. But it gives you more information about what the built environment is going to look like. So you then have an opportunity to say, I know you're requesting EFIS, but have you thought of other materials? Have you thought of any other cementitious-based product? They say, oh, maybe we do have other materials that we use. We were just going to suggest this for this location. So you have an opportunity to have that conversation with the developer at a state before it has moved on to building permitting process. And then you look at it and say, not what I envisioned.
These are going to be the buildings that stay like 40 years.
Correct.
Which is why I hate EFIS. Because people run into it and it looks awful.
You will have an opportunity to add that to our UDO. Okay. So
if you look
at it.
All right.
So, okay. No EFIS. So the buildings, again, these are the most prominent. They shape our environment. So public space. So there's the public side, and then there's the private side, and the private side deals with landscaping on site, so we'll get to that. But this is the public space, and the public space doesn't always necessarily have to be parks and, you know, open green space. So typically, we get our information on how the public space is going to be developed from other plans. They could be a parks plan. Parks has and their own standards how far a public facility for open space should be based off of distance and population. And so that's why we have, you know, we require either land cash or park so that we can put the cash if they can't provide that on site for another park facility in the area, because we want to have a certain ratio of parks to built environment. This creates an opportunity for us to have festival planning, where we can have gathering spaces. So it's important. So when you have a PUD, you want to, that comes before you, you want to ask about public space. What are you offering? Even though it's on the private sector side, there are opportunities for you to partner with these businesses and utilize sometimes their parking. Say if we have a festival and we need to park at Menards, they have the parking available, they have the open space available. So these opportunities to look at how we can utilize development for some of our public space needs. Yes, yes, public space needs. And again, we rely heavily on these documents so that we can plan for the future for development, not just that particular development, but the future development surrounding the sites. So streets. Streets are kind of that land use that people don't really characterize as a land use. Transportation is a land use. It gets us from one space to the next space. It provides opportunities for different modalities, and we'll talk about that next when we talk about transportation systems. But this usually falls under the purview of engineering and public works. So when you get these plans before you, you see, okay, it's got a street around, but you have to think about it. This is a heavily used site, possibly. Are the streets that connect to it adequate enough to provide the transportation needs? And that's one of your standards when you look at a special use or for PUD. It's important to know and what the traffic patterns are. Are these uses going to be highly trafficked in the morning during rush hour, or are they going to counter that high traffic? So does it complement what's already there? So street systems are important. And as urban planners, we also offer, you know, design standards as well for streets. And we have complete streets. That's another type of thing that we look at. Is the street complete in that it provides a walking path next to it? If there's an accident, is there a shoulder? Can our emergency vehicles get through in that particular area? So that's how we plan for streets in our built environment. They're the floor, the bottom layer of development, but an important thing. Transportation systems, which I mentioned before. So streets get a person in a vehicle from place to place. With transportation systems, they kind of work, they get you people from site to site, from space to space, from place to place, now space to space. So transportation systems are similar to streets, but they offer not just the space for travel, but the different modalities. So you want to make sure that you not only provide vehicular ability for those who have cars. But what about people that don't have cars? How are they going to get around in your community? If you don't provide that, then you don't have the opportunity to enjoy the benefit of that resident through their life cycle. Typically, people that are older may not drive as much. They may rely on some type of public transportation system. So you want to be able to offer that to your residents. Teenagers, they get jobs. They need to be able to get back and forth to their place of work. And most of them work not, so you don't have cars. We're seeing a new phenomenon in planning that less teenagers are getting driver's licenses. So that's less cars on the road, you think. But no, they're using rideshare services. So it actually is increasing the type of traffic that we're seeing on our streets, but it's not creating parking, the need for parking. So now we're adjusting our scope on how we look at parking. Just because you get to a site from a vehicle does not necessarily mean you need to have that storage for vehicles.
I think I told you the story that I have there's a $200 million job at Midway Airport that got canceled for me. They were doing an expansion to their existing parking garage, mm-hmm. $200 million project. The whole thing is, you know what, canned, because the commissioner of the Chicago Board of Transportation believes that parking garages are not the future, that rideshare and autonomous vehicles are the future, and there will not be a need for parking garages. So this plan, this parking garage, $200 million project that has $20 million already spent in engineering and upfront costs, is just gone.
And it's interesting because we're trying to figure out, as planners, how to address that. So when you have traditional big box development, you have all the sea of parking, but you rarely have spaces or places to drop people off and pick people up. Well, that's what ride shares rely on. People are looking for door-to-door service. So now we have to look at how we situate buildings on sites to accommodate maybe four or five people coming in rideshare services getting picked up. There's also delivery service, delivery, as we mentioned before, for goods and services. So now we need to make sure that people have places and spaces to park near those entrances to pick up their deliveries or their groceries or goods and then be able to leave. You're going to see a lot of the retails do
that. I went to Cave Key for work last month, and I thought to send you a picture. Mm-hmm. If you get a chance, go on Google Earth or something and take a look. They did exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. I believe that they took away the downtown parking. In exchange for that downtown parking, they made wider sidewalks to perhaps encourage pedestrian walking downtown, and then did rideshare lanes just directly adjacent to it, and it looks really nice.
Yeah, and that's a benefit to older communities, built-out communities that don't have the parking that's needed. They can make those adjustments to their transportation systems and their streets to accommodate ride-sharing. And the last component is landscaping. Landscaping is that private side of the property where, as opposed to the public side, you have parks. Landscaping enhances or softens up the streetscape for a building. So when you have these big box developers that come in, or just PUDs, and they have a lot of surface area, they have a lot of surface parking, they have a lot of buildings, you are going to want to have a ratio of landscape. Right now, our landscaping ordinance does not put in the design that ratio, which just says you have to have so many trees per every foot or bushes. But you kind of want to see a good ratio. A good ratio is about 10% of the area dedicated to some greenery. You don't want to deny the developer the ability to get a return on investment by obligating them to have 30 or 40% of open space that's unusable, it's not desirable. But these areas of open space can provide stormwater management systems. So you have your dry basin, it can double as a landscape area, but also it softens up the view. It doesn't feel so intimidating when you're a pedestrian to walk to a facility that has landscaping. Usually landscaping, you have pathways identified for you where you can meander through. If you are facing a development and all you see are parking stalls and cars zipping through a big building that far away, you're kind of hesitant on how to navigate that area. Green space, especially if you have parking islands, and now a lot of developments are providing walking paths through islands, so you're not walking in the aisles of the parking stalls. That makes it more accessible for all different modalities, all different types of accessibility too. People with children are very hesitant to walk with little small children in parking lots because it is very dangerous. You can't see around another car. So if you provide those opportunities through landscaping to get people from their car to the door, then you've created a better development. And then just the objectives, so wrapping all of that up, and I told you about all the different pieces of urban design. Well, how do you put those all together? What's the overall objective when we do all this? So we're looking for livability. Does this community meet your needs? Can you shop here? Can you work here? Can you, have leisure activities here? And are they a convenient, location where you can go and not have to, drive all the time? Where you can bike, right? That's another modality that we can talk about. Character. Do the buildings that are within your community provide a sense of place? Does it set the tone? Does it give me an expectation that I'm here? This is a quaint downtown. Okay, well, ooh, this is a busy downtown. All buildings provide an expectation of what you're going to expect when you are in that environment. So what we need to look at our buildings and say, what expectation to a visitor are we setting? And there's diversity. Diversity doesn't always have to do with individuals, it has to do with spaces too. Are you providing the diverse use of land Do we have enough residential to support our commercial? Do we have enough open space? Do we have enough industrial? So we want to look at those ratios when we approve plans as well. And continuity, that is what we had talked about previously. It helps you kind of understand your environment. So if I have a whole row of homes, I know this is a neighborhood. It gets kind of quirky when you have homes and you got industrial use in the middle. You're not understanding your environment. Where am I? So that's where planning and zoning actually helps you understand your environment. And then connectivity, is it easy to get from one thing to another to navigate throughout the community? And then the final one is adaptability. And that's kind of leading back to what we were talking about. Does the community provide the ability to grow and change over time and to adapt to those things that affect development, which would be the social changes, the technology, and the economic conditions? I'll leave you with one thought. When I was at the earlier this year, the APA conference, I sat in a session and they talked about how to plan for people with autism. And I thought it was really interesting because you don't think, well, we have ADA, the American Disabilities Act, which tells us, okay, for people in wheelchairs or other disabilities, how we get them and move them throughout the community, how we provide services for them. But people with neurological disorders, it's very hard to understand what their needs are when they're out in the environment.
So what did they say their needs were?
So a couple of this, the presenter spoke with over like 500 individuals with special needs in varying ways of communication. And what they found was that we need to add signage down on the ground. Most of these individuals do not engage in eye contact. And I know from experience, I have a child with autism. So they don't engage in a lot of eye contact. So if you can get people where they need to be through information on the ground, and again, landscaping can help with this, or painting on the ground.
Or the old part of town, the town square, used to have Church Street and Main Street in the sidewalk squares.
Yes.
I don't know if it still does anymore.
So that you can know your path. So that, and you will see that, I think Target has began to do that with the colored, the red arrow, pathway, excuse me. So that's one opportunity. Another opportunity that they mentioned was there needs to be an identified safe space in locations so that they know if they are having problems with communicating or understanding where they are, there's signage that can lead them to a safe space where they can get the information that it is that they need. So we need to think about all these things as needs change for individuals, as technology changes, how it affects how we review plans, and what we're looking for in development. And Jason is going to stay over. You guys know you how to incorporate all these things in your plan.
All right. And, Jeff asked some questions. Christy, we touched on a couple of these things. But really, we know these are design elements of urban design. So what does that mean to you? What can you guys actually do with this knowledge? How do you apply it? That you're kind of asking, when do we have control over something, right? So really the big thing with urban design, and especially in Yorkville, is we have a stated vision. Our comprehensive plan, our award-winning comprehensive plan, there is a vision statement. And it's very long, but it has lots of goals and ideas for where we want to be 20, 30, 40 years down the road. And this, as commissioner, should always be in your head of when a project comes in, okay, if it's a large project or something like that, with design issues going, how does this fit into what we want? So certain questions I'm going to go over for each one of these design elements and questions you can ask yourselves for each one. But, you can always say, all right, here's a project, here's a Walmart or something. Does this really fit in this location? Is this what we want? Is this where we're adapting to in the future? Is this where we want to go? And then secondly, you can ask yourself, while it may not fit now, let's say a Walmart in this location or a big box store here doesn't fit now, is this area designated in the future? Is that our vision for the future, is to have something like this and redevelop the area around it? So you keep those two things in mind. And when it really comes down to it, there are things that you have control over, the things you don't have control over. So many of the people who have been on a commission for a while know there's only a certain handful of issues that come up. Those that are new will find out. It's variances, special uses, PUDs, final plat, But basically, the special use and the PUD, and we haven't had a PUD come here in a while, but those are times where we can put special requests on things, like material effects. Say, hey, you know, we've heard from the public, they want this, we think it's a good idea that you make it out of this. This is where you can ask a petitioner for special things, saying, yeah, you're asking for this special request, we're asking for it in return. And this is where you can take some of these elements and really incorporate them. You know, not hammer them over the head saying it's this way or the highway, but at least thinking about and asking these types of questions. So really building design.
No quid pro quo, as they say.
No.
Okay.
Actually, in zoning.
I mean, yes, you may be there.
It just has to be a connection.
It has to, yeah.
Linkage.
Yes, yes, there you go, Nexus.
Essentially. So when, let's say, special use comes in and you're looking at building design, things to ask is like, does this belong here? Does this make sense? And like, what else is around here? So a lot of times when you're looking at plans, we'll hand you a set of plans, and Chris was saying this too, it's very 2D. Maybe you'll think about it 3D, but maybe you don't think about what's two doors over. Maybe you're not thinking in a larger context of, you know, you got to keep that vision in mind too of where is this going? And I put a picture of the downtown in here because with the downtown form-based code and the streetscape master plan, we've kind of already set that in motion for that area. We picked things that we liked. We're trying to encourage that kind of design and development downtown. So those things have already kind of happened. But for people to come in, you can kind of think about where is this going? Well, yeah, this modern building might not fit here, but we want to modernize this area, and we're looking to do that. This could be the impetus to start that. Moving on to public space, things you can ask yourself is this being, that's really small. is it developed, again, looking at that outside portion, is it being supported by a public space nearby? Depending on if it's apartment complexes, is there a park nearby? Is there a place for people to congregate? Or is the development providing it itself? If it's going to be a large development where there isn't any public spaces around, or if it's a PUD and there aren't parks or bike trails or things like that, these are things we need to think about moving forward. And, what are our goals? What should our goals be for having public spaces? When new commercial developments come in, should we require them, to have a little plaza or have something just in general, a meeting space?
Do we ever do parks when we're doing these, what is it, cash?
Yeah, land cash.
Land cash that aren't like children's parks? Do we have any that we've
yes,
done
we do. We have different types. We have regional parks, which offer things for the young as well as the old. We have passive areas, which are available for use for anybody. So we do look at that. Actually,
have we done that?
We as a group have not. That's what the park boards.
City of York.
Yes, we have a parks master plan.
Moving on to streets, some things you can look at, and again, not so much with a special use, but maybe a PUD plan or a large subdivision or things like that, but still to keep in your mind if it's a smaller development. Is the scale appropriate for the area? I put a 50 wide lane Chinese interstate that I would hope not only not in America, but in Yorkville, it probably does not belong anywhere. Very similar, the 47 and 34 routes are going to have different types of traffic than if you're off, more closer to downtown on Custis or something like that. Does the layout promote a variety of transportation options, which kind of melds a little bit into the transportation system and what Christy talked about, complete streets. Complete streets are for everyone. Bikers, walkers, people with strollers, cars, buses. So depending on the type of development, again, with the PUD, you can say, okay, what type of people are using this? What do we want to promote? It's our vision to have a lot more bicycling. We should really, you know, try and require some sort of dedicated bike lane, not a sharrow, not just painting something on the road saying watch out, but actually doing something about it. And then finally, do the access points and flow make sense in the area? And this is even on small planes. You know, you're looking at access aisles. How wide are they? What type of traffic? You know, especially when we get to gas stations, the trucks are coming in. We got to make sure that turn radius is right and that you don't interfere with cars. But also just in general, especially on like the PUD, I put a picture down here. There's a spot for two neighbors that are backdoor neighbors. It takes 17 minutes to drive driveway to driveway. It was not laid out in a great manner. You share a backyard with somebody, but you cannot drive and park in the driveway. It takes 17 minutes. So it's just kind of some of those thoughts you kind of want to run through your head, again, on that bigger picture outside of what's just in front of you. Transportation.
Can I bug you one?
Yeah.
While you're on the topic of streets, how do you guys plan for utilities going forward? So when it comes to like encouraging utility companies and common way things on a certain road, is there any way to better plan for that? I know in my business, like we do as a main, it's mostly distribution main. And so whenever we're fixing it, it's kind of like we're going around sidewalks, under sidewalks, stuff like that. Is there any way to better plan that downtown where you have designated areas for utilities?
So it's hard in a built downtown. Because you are dealing with infrastructure that's already there, streets on top, you know, and then in the street, which is not ideal because you have to, you know, dig up the street and then repair it. But what we found is in opportunities where like Route 47 was improved with the state, those are opportunities for us to then relocate, upgrade, and a cost savings to the city then if we were to do it. We also do it in conjunction now when we redo roads.
Right.
So we have a Road to Better Roads program, which we identify those roads. So when we are going in there, we do everything at once since it's open.
To make them a complete road? Or
no. So if they're failing, if they're old and they need to be replaced, those are opportunities for us to dig up the road. And while the road is exposed and in those areas that have utilities there,
bury everything.
Correct.
I would like to see the gentleman who came last week, he was speaking about the Seal School and the lack of sidewalks in the manufacturing district. I mean, there's still parts of Old Town that don't have sidewalks. I would think that should be a priority.
It is. I'm funny that you mentioned that. That's one of our priorities, directions that we got from our last month goal setting session with the elected officials.
And sidewalks. You should piggyback on all of the work that's going to be happening with 47 and 34, you're going to have, with Narvik in town, right? I'm supposing that Narvik is going to be delivering the concrete for these roads, right? Let's just say that happens. They're going to have loads that are rejected, right? They're going to send a concrete truck out there with a fully loaded 8-cubic-yard load, and it's going to get there 1 minute past when it's specified, and Narvik just has to throw it away. Well, if we had some plan on our end and maybe had a sidewalk already dug, coned off, ready to go, Narvik's looking for a place to put it. They can put it down in that sidewalk. City of York, it's not hard to finish a sidewalk. City of York, I could do it, no problem. And then we get some free sidewalks out of it or something.
You'd save them a ton of money because then they don't have to dump it.
Right, they don't have to throw it away.
Miles.
Exactly.
That's something that I'd be happy to pass along to our public works director.
There has to be some way to get some incidental benefit from all the road work going on that's not like utilities.
Gravel coming in here. Another one that we could get them to dig the hole for.
Right. Well, Narvik's got that huge pile of Narvik's got that huge pile of concrete, all their washout that's sitting there too. They come around and crush it and they can't use it in their product. They ship it somewhere else. That's type of material. Exactly. You could put it right under the sidewalk and maybe you get 200 feet of free sidewalk a year, but after 10 years, that's a lot of sidewalk.
That actually kind of brings us to the transportation systems. that kind of review is, you know, who's going to be using this, what types of things. And so, like, definitely when you guys get plans, gaps and sidewalks is an issue in our community. Something's getting redeveloped or something's getting new, having sidewalks in the front or having a multi-use path nearby to start connecting some of these spaces, especially in the downtown. You know, somebody acquires some land and puts it together and has to come in front of you. It's a very good idea to be like, well, hold on again, let me think about that vision, and especially this is a problem, sidewalks. Even, I can't specifically say, get recycled or stuff and make that kind of thing. We talked to Public Works about that. But it is like something that should be on the forefront of your mind when you think about transportation systems. You also need to be thinking about the use itself and what's practical. I remember that I used to volunteer in Montgomery, and they had a requirement for commercial buildings to provide bike parking. You had to do it. You had to provide a certain amount per the amount of parking spaces you had. Well, Sam's Club came to town, and I was sitting there going, like, they need to provide 44 parking spaces? Like, yeah. And I was like, well, the people who go shopping at Sam's Club aren't going to bike back home.
Does the Tour de France have 44 bikes?
So I was like, at best, the employees, but it's on the corner of 30 and 34. I was like, this seems like, you know, so it's those types of things you got to think about. Like, okay. Like, while it would be nice to for everybody to provide bike parking, everything has a bike lane on it, there are situations where it's like, okay, you know, in the big picture, that's not necessary for this area. And finally, landscaping, which again, Christy kind of alluded to, like, we have our minimum standards for landscaping and things we have to do. And again, we'll be updating those in the UDO. But it is questions you want to ask when you're looking at it, especially if it's part of a special use or things like that. It's like, is this actually enhancing it, or are they just doing the bare minimum? Is there anything we could do? It could even be a little bit of public space, but also, like, are these plants going to hold up? You know, we typically try and put a variety of plants in there that are going to hold up in our weather, but, you know, you never know. The yellow ash borer shows up, and then all of a sudden you have all that. I know in Aurora, my whole neighborhood is ash trees, is frontage trees, so they're all getting cut down. And replanted with something else. So it's those types of things you can think to yourself, saying, like, I know this is the minimum. Can you guys maybe do something a little bit different here? You know, put in a bioswale in your dryad detention so it, you know, gives some sort of attractiveness instead of just a ditch. So this is kind of how, and it's really the special use in PUDs, where you guys get to review these plans and actually get to see them, to take some of these concepts of our design and put it into real use.
Sure, we should be more aggressive when it comes to those special use PUDs on our...
Yeah. I'm not saying be aggressive, I'm asking to be mindful and thoughtful of these types of things. This is stuff Christy and I... learned in school, you know, we practice, you know, I was in private industry and, you know giving plants saying, do these things, it's going to make things look nice, and then it sits on a shelf. We're trying to enact our plan because as planners, it's our job to get us from where we are to where we're going, where our vision takes us. So as the Planning and Zoning Commission, you guys get an opportunity to help in that planning. So I'm not saying be aggressive, you know, be jerks and ask for a million things, but to keep these types of things in mind.
But don't be shy.
We should ask ourselves, what else can we get out of these people? You didn't put that up.
No, you should be asking yourselves, is this just a bare bones project, or are they enhancing our vision and our design work that is acceptable for where we want to go? It's basically holding yourself to a certain standard.
As part of the UDO, are we looking at existing landscape standards?
Yes.
Okay. Where is our ability to ask for things? So one thing I'm thinking right now is, say a PUD comes across our desk. Can we ask for, say, additional right-of-way off of the existing parcels? Or is that something that goes too far? Where's the line?
So the line is... it has to rationally be something that's part of the request. So Jason and I were just talking about this landmark case. I think it was from 65?
It was in the 60s.
Yeah. So it was called, I believe this was Dolan versus South Carolina. So what happened was these residents came and asked the city for a variance on their property. Their property backed up to a private beach to the waterfront. So the city said, oh, you want a variance for us? I think it was a setback variance. Well, you've got to donate us a strip of your property so that the public can have access to that beach behind your house. There was no connection to the request that they were asking and what the city then asked of them. So they sued. And so the finding was it has to be rational connection to what they're asking for. So if they are asking for...
Increase in fence height to 10 feet. We can say that's fine, but you can't.
But you have to make it out.
But you have to have landscaping or something like. So it has to connect.
Pure gold.
So if there was a plan that we had in place that had talked about we want extra easement or right of way on this property, then that's an opportunity to say, well, you want to develop it, but our plan had already established that we want to have some type of right of way here. So if you can connect the two. Ask for it.
Just like having that vision, you know, like maybe you want the extra right of way for a bike lane or a multi-use path or something like that. As long as there's a connection between what you're asking for and your goals and vision, like,
I totally agree.
You can't.
I was actually thinking down the line because I'm thinking the upgradability of this and utilities because that's what I do all freaking day. So I'm sitting there thinking about that. And we deal with so many times where we're shutting down a road just to put a bore pit. Where if we had 5 feet of right of way, that road could remain operable.
And we do, and again, we do require public utility and you know, easements, drainage easements. Yep. So that's a good point. So what we need to do is identify those locations where Public Works needs that extra space so that they can do work or whatever, and then we incorporate that into a master plan.
Thank you.
And also with the utilities in downtown, we try to make it required that if you're redeveloping the site to have the lines put underground. And our Public Works Department was like, there's so much underground.
There's no space.
There's nowhere to put wires, especially like, he's like, because we'll dig them up and we'll just call ComEd and they'll, if you have a trench dug, they'll put it down. He's like, there's just nowhere to go.
Right. I'm the opposite of that with one of these jobs I'm working on in Iowa, where it's one of the old town squares. And all the alleys have enormous H-frames with so much electric, they've had two Bobcats now with their wheels melted to the ground because they're hitting them. So they have nothing on the ground. It's all overhead.
Wow.
I hate the way the overhead looks in your
phone.
Yeah, that's one of my long-time, long-term goals is to eliminate that.
The city master plan still has those as being buried. The feasibility of it will have to be figured out someday.
You're on a parcel-by-parcel basis? So that's all we have for tonight. There's information on the Metro Extension Study in there. If you want to go to the open house, December 2nd, December 3rd, take a look at the website and have some plans.
All right. Nothing else on tonight's agenda. We have a motion to adjourn, please. All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
All those opposed say no. Meeting adjourned at 8:30.